found this in Gunner Room. Gunner Mirror.
What is it?
Well, it's a performance.
Listening to Synthaholics with your host David Duncan and with honor
the party robot Aaron O'Brien. We will party all night long, party like it's 1999.
So what's up with the robot voice?
We're talking about robots gone wild.
Define wild.
When they take their clothes off and they tease you. But in the Star Trek universe, it actually means they're probably out to take over your ship and probably trying to kill everybody.
Or, you know, nearly killing everybody, or taking over your body, or transferring things with a spinny table.
Well, you're strapped naked to it.
You've got to be naked, otherwise it doesn't transfer everything.
It just doesn't work. Yeah, so we're talking about today robots gone wild. So in all sci-fi, there's always the fear of the robot. If you're talking about going back to Asimov's iRobot, or if we're going into Terminator and the idea of robots going around killing everybody.
Skynet.
Yes.
Must have Skynet.
Or if we're going into Star Trek, we have androids and robots that think that they're better than us biological units.
I want the creator. Where is the creator?
I know, we need to find that creator. And that's the other thing is, very often these robots have like sort of a, they want to find their mommies. They're always looking for the mommies.
Or daddies.
Yeah, or daddies in some cases. But they're always coming back to find who created them. So it's an interesting thought, an argument of like intelligent life becoming so sentient in it, they want to find out where they're coming from. And it's sort of like humans are. We're always at, you know, what's our origin?
Who am I?
Yeah, who am I? What am I here for? Where did I get started from? And the best answer to always ask is, obviously, you know, we ask our parents, we ask our gods, we ask, you know, people who came before us.
So. And the science books, because they're always infallible.
That's right. Anything like that. Well, especially the scientists who want to create these robots. So we're going to delve into all the different episodes where we think were the robots and the mechanical beings in Star Trek basically try to take over and usually try to kill, or usually a lot of people get killed or hurt really bad.
And we're being holodeck not included, holograms not included,
yeah,
for this. to you know,
because there's just too many. There are too many robot episodes to go. So we'll do holodecks in a separate thing where holodecks gone wild.
So we're going the physical. You can touch it without it being a force field route.
Yes, exactly. This is an actual mechanical being of some sort that man had created, constructed. With hopes that it would serve man, but in the end, it had a cookbook to say to serve man.
I used to be nomad.
So we're going to go over a couple episodes. Do you want to go?
I guess we should go original air date forward.
Okay, so original air date, I believe the first one then would be What Little Girls Are Made Of.
Yes.
So Little Girls Are Made Of is an interesting...
Apparently they're made of circuits.
Yeah, well, yeah. And they're also made of weird moss-like bodies before they even become an android.
So what are big girls made of?
I don't even want to go into that. So let's talk about what the... just rundown of the episode. We have USS Enterprise is looking for the missing doctor. His name is Dr. Roger Corby. He is a cyber. He is a scientist.
Cyberneticist,
I believe, and he is been missing for some 5 years. And the twist is that he is actually Nurse Chapel's fiance.
So they've been engaged for how many years, and she's been trying to hit on Spock?
Well, you know, it gets lonely on the Enterprise, as Kirk will tell you.
But Spock can only do it once every 7 years, apparently. So, like, you know, the engagement's actually been shorter than as many times as Spock can.
She's playing it safe. So, she's got a vested interest. So, they come to the planet where Roger Corby was last seen. The planet is all a big iced over planet. There's not much signs of life. There is some evidence or some there's been some communication in the past that he might have found some underground tunnels. They send out communications, and sooner or later they do come in contact with the voice of Dr. Roger Corby, and he says, "I'm alive and well down on the planet. Come down to these coordinates. Beam down." He wanted just first Captain Kirk just to beam down, but then Nurse Chapel, Christine, pipes up and he says, "Roger, it's me, Christine." And he's happy to hear from her. She's happy to hear from him. They're going to have their they're going to reunite, and everything's going to be all right.
Kind of feeling like Kirk was almost going to be killed if he came by himself.
Yeah, yeah. And Kirk still plays it safe.
By Herman Munster.
Yeah. It's not Herman Munster. It's Lurch. Lurch. Yeah. Anyways.
Whatever.
So they go down to the planet, and while they're doing, they bring down a two security man detail, and they descend to the caves. They leave one guy above, one guy follows them down. As they go down, they run into Mr. Corby's assistant, or Dr. Corby's assistant. His name is Brown, or as Nurse Chapel likes to affectionately call him, is Brownie.
And because he likes to make special brownies.
Yes. And
take that how you will.
But he doesn't recognize Christine whatsoever. And that was the strange thing, is that she had known him before, and it's been 5 years. And Kirk is kind of thinks it's a little odd.
She's a nice looking woman, so why would you at least pretend to, like, you know,
what?
Know her?
Christine, oh yeah, I remember you back on Targus 4.
And that time you went to Ryza.
Yeah. So they come back. They come down to the planet. Brownie brings them down to their. Their little compound underground, and that's where not only they meet Roger Corby, they meet the beautiful android Andrea.
We don't know that yet.
We don't know that yet, but this is an android, and let's just face it, Dr. Corby made her just for one purpose only.
Boing.
He's making a little bonga bonga rooms in the search research facility.
Yet he insists that she can't love.
She can't love.
She can't do it. She's impossible. Kiss Kirk. Kiss. Slap Kirk. Slap.
Yes. So Dr. Corby comes in. There's a very loving scene where him and Christine get together, and they're kissing, and they're so happy to see each other.
And necking
right in front of everybody. What does transpire, though, just before that, I forgot to mention that the very tall android...
Lurch.
Who's Lurch? Is his name is Rock, and he pushes him off the edge and kills him. And later on, he kills the other security officer up on the very top of the entrance of the cave,
near the window.
Yes. So right away, we're alerted that this guy is no good, and there's something suspicious going on. Fast forward a little bit. Dr. Corby basically wants to keep his research secret. He wants to move to a planet where he can start...
mass-producing androids.
Mass-producing androids. He makes a duplicate of Captain Kirk.
To impress him.
Yes. And this is where it gets sexy, because a young William Shatner is strapped to a table naked.
Or only his crotch is covered.
Only his crotch is covered.
I guess his restraints.
Yeah.
They're restraining William Shatner by his...
They got him by the ding-dong, let's just say. So anyways, his hair, he is a hairless chest, shaved chest captain getting spun around very quickly. I actually was thinking that I would have vomited if that was me on there.
I was thinking the same thing. I'm just like, did they just get like a body double or something so they could spin him around? You can't really see
I think
it.
They just sped it up in the film.
Because, I mean, I wonder how many times he barfed or how they had to clean up the set or...
Oh, get the puke bucket out again. No, but I think they just spun that up. I spun the film around to make it look faster. So there's a duplicate captain. And they basically, Captain Kirk, just before he gets cloned by this android, he thinks some awful thoughts about Spock, saying, you know, keep out of my business, you half-breed.
I guess this was like trying to like mess up the imprint of
exactly. He was trying to show that he had some kind of hostility towards Spock, something very uncharacteristic of him. So...
Apparently it's much easier to make androids in the 23rd century than it is to make them in the 24th century.
Well, here's the interesting thing is I thought of that myself, but he actually found all this equipment.
Poor Noonien Singh.
Yeah, he found all this. So Dr. Corby, when he came down the planet doing his research, not only did he find Rock, who's the Lurch person, very tall android. He was a leftover
from purple makeup
from the old ones, and they found the equipment. He learned how to use the equipment, and then they start mass producing these androids. So they have his love robot, and then he has Dr. Brown. That being said, so they basically they try to fool the Enterprise by Kirk coming up. The cloned android Kirk going up to the Enterprise, he does make the half-breed comment to Spock, raises Spock's suspicions that something's not right, and he prepares to beam down to the planet to find out. In the meantime, Kirk is seducing Andrea, the android.
Because he would.
Well, he's got to try. I'm down on the planet.
So you're incapable of love, huh? I wonder if I can change your mind.
And he kisses her really hard.
And then she gets ready to slap him again, so apparently he teaches his robots to be into S&M.
Yeah, there's some naughty stuff going on this planet. I wonder what happens when the Starfleet's not around. So that all being said, there's a little bit of a showdown between Kirk and the Rock, the large android who's chasing around. And there's a famous picture you see nowadays on the internet where Kirk is holding basically what it looks like a giant rock dildo. And this is where the episode is. He's holding this stalactite he rips off the cave like he's going to hit the android over the head with it.
He's such a muscular man. He rips off a stalactite with his bare hands.
But it does. It looks like a rock penis that he's holding the whole time.
So, ladies.
These sexual innuendos are all over this. And then, at the end of it, basically what happens, we find out that Dr. Corby was half dead when he found this cave, and they made an android of himself. So he's not even Dr. Corby himself. And at the last minute, he pulls the trigger and kills him and Andrea by killing them both. And we basically learn that androids at that point want to run humanity, take over everything.
Well, Corby wanted to put everything of a human. Like, whenever he copied Kirk, he was like, I can put everything into the robot. That way you can live forever. We can have a perfect world and make everything better because people will live forever and they won't hate and they won't have, you know, jealousy and they won't do this and that. Although, for a robot himself, he was kind of jealous.
Yeah, and then Kirk responds, and this is the flip side of that coin, is there no more tenderness and no more love, no more compassion, and which makes a good point. I mean, it's like, let's face it, I mean, although we like the nice parts of ourselves, the bad parts of ourselves define us as well. So that I think the idea is us trying to extend our lives forever is a nice thought, but we still have to have our humanity intact, or if it just won't work.
Yes, indeed. I used to be nomad.
So we're going to the next episode. We're going to talk about the episode, the original series is Changeling.
Which I mistaked for Metamorphosis. Yeah, I am sorry again,
couple
guys.
Episodes. Don't beat yourself up about that. It's like a slip of the tongue. So that's what we have. Nomad is basically a leftover from the 2000 space program.
We should be launching that anytime now, guys.
Actually, I think we already launched it technically. I think they said it was 2003 they launched it. But that being said...
NASA doesn't tell us things.
No, they don't tell us jack shit. They basically, they come across this this probe that's floating in space. It's no bigger than, I don't know, it's very, very small.
It's just a bit over a meter big. Yeah. And yet it can output damage that's equivalent to, like, 90% of a photon torpedo or 90 photon torpedoes. And
right.
They said they could take so much damage on the ship. I'm like, this is way more powerful than any other ship. I've never seen a ship take 90 torpedoes or something like that. This makes no sense. Also, its projectiles move at warp 15.
Warp 15. This, well, it might be going to transwarp. Remember, we're talking old warp.
This is like another thing I can point out from last time where, like, Star Trek was still trying to figure things out, and it's part of what irks me about the old series because numbers don't match up with anything else. That
right. Comes. Well, and the tragic part in the beginning is that we find out that they're en route to this a star system called the Malorian star system where they have a distress call, and basically they find out because of Nomad this probe had killed 4 billion people. So I mean, this thing is just a genocidal.
Maniacal robot-ish thing.
Yeah.
Which is a meter long and somehow can do all this damage. I don't think the Planet Killer even did that much damage, and it's giant.
Yeah, no, it's pretty rough. So they come in contact with it. Nomad is firing these attacks on Enterprise. The Enterprise takes a couple shots, can withstand it, but it's the ship's going to get destroyed. When they send out a signal to it, and Kirk identifies himself, and then it stops attacking. Because of that, it's misidentifies because it thinks that Kirk is its creator. That's what we find out in the end. The Nomad machine beams onto the Enterprise, and they kind of show it where they come from, so it realizes it comes from Earth, so it identifies Kirk as its creator.
So it can go destroy the Earth system.
Yeah, and the idea is that the Nomad wants to destroy all biological organisms that are imperfect, and let's face it, all biologicals, any species has some imperfection to it. It's just part of any kind of nature. So it finds some imperfection and destroys it.
This thing became so powerful because it crashed into an asteroid, which also had some other alien wreckage crashed onto it, and they decided to, like, fix each other. And I keep saying I used to be Nomad because I don't know why it doesn't take on a new name or, you know, something from
its
merger.
It's merger. So this is the strange part. So we have of this, I think the strangest part of the whole episode actually is Spock's mind meld with Nomad. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
I wonder if he can mind meld a tricorder.
It's like, you know, or mind meld a coffee pot, you know. When's the last time you brewed coffee?
My mind to your grinds. Your grinds to my mind.
Exactly. Nice. So, he mind melds. He fills in the blanks where Nomad's not able to do. So, I mean, Nomad has these spots where he's... has forgotten things through that destruction with the asteroid field. And what he did, Nomad came in contact with an extraterrestrial alien probe called Tanru that was there to collect sterilized soil samples to find new planets to habitat for them to colonize. When they combined, it mixed up its exploration for extraterrestrial life and sterilization, and hence, you get two great flavors.
Must sterilize everything.
Two great flavors that don't go together.
Like chocolate and other chocolate.
Like.
And brownies. Take that how you will.
All right. So, and the original builder is Jackson Roy Kirk, not Kirk. And that's where part of its memory gap, it only had the last part of the last name was Roy Kirk. So it only had Kirk in there. So that's why it mistaked Kirk as its creator.
I love how Spock like saves him at the last second when there's like, I'm not your creator. And Spock's, oh yeah, he's totally your creator. I love how
Spock is really
in.
Yeah, and it's only Kirk who messes up in the end, who basically says he's a biological unit and that he is imperfect. And then Nomad basically is like, well, then I'm gonna, you know.
Apparently, Nomad's sensors are terrible because he's like, Scotty unit is in perfection and it does this and it does that. And Uhura sings, so I'm going to wipe its memory because singing is stupid.
And again,
and like, how does it, if it's got sensors, it's so advanced, it can blow up cities with this like one little meter tall thing. It can do all this, but it can't tell the difference between Kirk and everyone else on the ship who are also human except for Spock?
I don't know.
Is it blind and all its sensors are broken?
Maybe.
How does it detect life?
I don't know. It's what it's supposed to do. It's and the again, Uhura's beautiful voice gets her in trouble again, just like in Charlie X, where she sang a song kind of mocking young Charlie, and this time she's just singing a nice little song, and Nomad comes up and goes, "Why are you singing?" He says, "You know, what kind of form of communication?" Because I like it, and he just blanks her mind out.
I love that she's like reading. Tim is a tin can. Tin can run. Run, tin, run.
Yeah.
I can't.
They're like at a first grade level. It's like, and then they're like, oh, we're going to teach her now college level, like in a couple of hours later. And it's
like, what?
That's terrible.
Maybe that's how she doesn't remember how to speak Klingon in Star Trek VI. Maybe they just never retaught her Klingon or whatever.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because I know the Red Letter Media guy kind of pokes fun at how she's like a super genius. But maybe she did know all this stuff before Nomad wiped her mind.
And strange enough that she's also speaking Swahili.
She remembers Swahili, because that's what, I guess she was a native Swahilian.
Right, but she's speaking Swahili, and then they're trying to speak to speak English.
So Scotty's got a Scottish accent. And, Chekhov's got a really strong Russian accent. Sulu has an American accent, and so does Uhura.
Right.
It's like, I guess they didn't want everyone to speak in an accent, or they just really, or the actors just couldn't pull them off.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe they wrote it in later. That being said, Kirk being biological basically informs, because he is imperfect, that he's made he created Nomad, that Nomad must be thus imperfect, and Nomad kind of gets into this feedback loop of logical
improbability. It does not compute.
Right, and I love Nomad's response to almost everything is non sequitur.
Non sequitur.
So great. Basically, Nomad's incapacitated. It's going to blow itself up. And
Kirk taunts it a couple extra times at the transporter pad just to make sure.
And can I just talk about Kirk, first of all, is that not only did, how many security cards died in that episode? At least
two for sure.
No.
They got vaporized.
There was four security guards who got killed. Scotty technically got killed. And Uhura was made into a vegetable. Okay? So at the very end of the episode, Kirk makes a joke about Nomad being his son and how he should be proud of him.
Oh, yeah. And, like, he was the doctor. My son, the doctor.
Yeah.
You do have a doctor son. I made a really weird face with my mouth wide open, and nothing happened.
Yeah. Dr. David Marcus. Anyway, so...
although he's probably, like... a speck in his eye now, maybe?
I don't know.
Maybe. We don't know when that happened.
No, that's never really explained. So, another fine piece of machinery gone awry, trying to kill everything.
I think this is the only robot. I think everything else is technically an android.
Right. Well, an android's a robot.
Yeah, Data wouldn't like it if you called him a robot.
I know, but I mean, it's technically a mechanical man. Exactly. I mean, Nomad is not like a mechanical man with arms and legs. And it's great, too, if you watch it a couple times, you can actually see the wire that's on Nomad that they're fishing him through the set. It's kind of funny.
I actually got to see the Nomad prop at the Star Trek Experience in Las Vegas when I was there the week it closed. it was really cool. They had lots of stuff sitting around, like in this like museum. They had lots of cool
that's awesome
things. Nomad didn't look that bad, but some of the phaser hand props look so bad. I can't really believe what, like,
they were just probably just like wooden pieces of junk that they're just like
or plastic. They're just really, really basic. It's stuff you don't really get the chance to look at on screen. You see Nomad up close, so he looked pretty much like how you know, you'd expect it to look, you know, in person. It just, you know, it's really old, but it was cool getting to see actually that android. Sorry, it's kind of a side tangent, but I just was like, oh, well, I've actually seen the thing in person behind it.
That is cool. No, I love to see all that stuff.
So sad they closed it. I was there in summer of 2008, and that's when it closed. It closed a week later. I don't know if you guys have the Blu-ray set of the, I think it's the Next Generation. It has the farewell to the Star Trek Experience on there, and it made me cry.
Oh.
it's just like everyone's so sad, and it goes through some of the actors who worked there, and it's just like, you know, it's their last day, and, you know, all these fans go, and they're all, like, so sad that this thing is closing, and it was an amazing thing. The rides were really cool. I'm sure there's some videos online. You can check out the rides. It was really cool.
That's cool.
I don't know if you listen to this podcast, there's other Star Trek podcasts. One's called Trekcast. One of the guys actually worked at the Experience, actually as a bartender.
Cool.
Darren Benjamin, so they're a great podcast, too. Check them out. They always talk about the Experience. So some of the early episodes, they actually have some interviews with some of the actors. So they're definitely worth checking out to hear about that.
Very cool. Now, should we talk about V'ger?
I mean, V'ger's almost the same story as Nomad.
Yeah, except he makes it to Earth.
And it destroyed everything in its path.
Yeah, so V'ger basically comes, is another idea of a probe that somehow got found by a this time an advanced race that found it and took it and basically souped it up to the nth degree. This is Star Trek the Motion Picture. This is the first actual movie.
As opposed to the static picture.
Yes. And just a word of warning, Star Trek the Motion Picture is a very long movie. It's going to be hard for most people to watch.
It's a long movie where nothing happens.
Yeah, it's very long and drawn out. I adore the movie for its own thing. I actually saw the movie when it came out in the theaters. I was very, very young. But I was a huge, you know, I liked Star Trek back then.
It's an effects film. It really is. It's a 1970s effects film. Because,
yeah.
I mean, most of the movie is just long tracking shots of the Enterprise flying through this giant probe and all its different landscapes. Some of them look beautiful. Some of them, the force perspective didn't come off right and they look like a model, which is unfortunate. But, I rewatched it actually a couple weeks ago and it looks really good considering how old the film is.
It's a good looking film.
It's a nice looking film for its age.
And it's nice to see all the cast there together, and they're still relatively very young. I mean, not as young as what you see in the 1960s, but I mean, it's like we're fast forwarding maybe pushing 20 years, maybe just a little bit short, and they still look pretty. Like Kirk still looks trim and fit. Spock still looks good. McCoy, even though he has that kind of that disco thing look coming out with the long beard, he still looks good. So it's very interesting to see them all together again.
Ilea looks good.
Ilea looks really good. Yeah. So V'ger comes and he tries to destroy Earth, and if it wasn't for basically them discovering that it's actually Voyager. Which one is it? Voyager
5?
Voyager 5? Or Voyager 6?
Voyager 6. It doesn't matter because we never actually had a Voyager that high. Unless NASA is hiding more
stuff
from us.
I think NASA's hiding
so
much.
NASA's hiding so much stuff from us, guys.
Yes.
It's
we have
conspiracy.
Pyramids on Mars as well.
It's a conspiracy. We're wearing tinfoil hats right now. So and enjoy that picture in your mind. Maybe we'll put a picture up on our Facebook.
So, no, let's not do that.
It'll be Photoshopped since we're not actually wearing tinfoil hats. We don't actually believe any of this.
The Enterprise has to stop V'ger, and they do that by the power of love.
With the robot version of Ilea.
And Captain Decker.
Good old
Captain Decker.
Decker.
Yeah, so another Decker bites the dust in the Star Trek universe.
And a big fiery blaze.
Yeah.
It's like resume. Died fiery blaze. Check.
Like, what are you going to do when you grow up, son? I'm going to die in a big fiery blaze like you, Dad.
That's my boy.
Yeah.
So,
I wonder if you got to see the video from the Enterprise screen of his dad dying. So unshaven, with a crazy look in his eye.
If anybody doesn't know, there's a Doomsday Machine. It's another episode where Commodore Decker comes across a giant machine. We're not covering it as a robot because it's more of a weapon of mass destruction.
It's a giant bugle.
It's a giant bugle.
That spews fire that chews up the chunks of planets.
Yes. It's a planet eater. And it's some leftover of some giant maybe warfare that happened, you know, in a different part of the galaxy or a different galaxy altogether. And Commodore Decker's ship was destroyed, and he basically tried to steal the Enterprise but end up flying the shuttlecraft into the mouth of the giant planet killer and killing himself.
This is suicide done right, guys.
If you're going to do it,
you might as well make sure you're not going to feel it.
Yeah. But that being said, his supposed son, I don't think that's ever been quietly put out that was his son. But it seems like it would have been his son.
FYI, Sid the Hulk does not condone suicide.
Unless you're trying to save the human race and fly into the mouth of a planet killer. I'm for that.
Suicide not recommended.
No, not at all. All right, so V'ger was another robot gone wild. And then we now fast forward into the next generation.
The next generation.
So, of course, we all know the beloved character of Data.
Who?
Data, the lovable android who seems to not know very common things in the human language.
The early what catches the what?
And he, they, well, let's just talk about his brother.
How do androids have siblings?
Well,
when a daddy and a mommy android love each other, right? Wait, no.
No. So we have Data's creator, Dr. Noonien Soon, first created his brother Lore. Lore.
Nope. That's not true.
He created somebody. Oh, before. Before. Forgot about that jackass.
Before. So.
What, why did he call him B4?
Why be not?
So, he basically... Lore came before Data. Lore was programmed with emotions, but Lore was... Lore had an arrogance to him. He had a little bit superiority complex set to him. And he was also... pretty much maniacal and very different from Data. So in the episode Data Lore, they actually find Lore in a secret compound where they found Data, and Lore was disassembled and they reassemble him.
But most importantly, there's really, really cool drawings of children of a giant snowflake and people running away in fear.
And what Dave is referencing is this giant snowflake is actually the crystalline entity, which actually came down to that planet and destroyed everyone on the planet except Data. Because
but apparently it took its time because children had time to draw these images and their parents had time to hang them up.
Right. It's like, oh, this is a beautiful drawing. We're all going to die. So they reassemble Lore. Lore becomes... you know, walking around the crew trying to learn. And what we find out is Lore is basically the evil brother of Data. And Lore tries to take Data's place by basically turning Data off and putting on his clothes. And nobody seems to notice except good old Wesley.
Oh, Wesley is always on top of things. It floors me how... the kid is always smarter than people. And even when Data's not out of commission, he sometimes outsmarts Data.
Right.
Which is also flooring because he's got like 16 different intellects built into his programming on top of his own intellect.
Right, right. So Lore tries to take over the Enterprise and summons the crystalline entity for that's the part that's really not explained, is what does he get out of the deal of bringing crystalline entity to destroy all these biological life forms? It doesn't.
Maybe Lore just likes to watch them die.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe he just wanted the Enterprise all to himself, which might have been a nice prospect, too. But yeah. That being said, at the last minute, they get Data back up and running.
I love where they get where did they get the tree from?
The tree.
the feed the crystalline entity. They test it. No, they beam it out so they can shoot it with a torpedo and show
right.
They're stronger. Like, why don't we have a tree?
Yeah, I don't know what that's about. I imagine they had some trees in the Enterprise.
Well, I mean, they had the aeroponics bay. We saw that. The garden where Keiko.
Right.
But it didn't look like there's room for anything big.
Yeah. Well, I bet you there's a couple spots where they have trees in there.
And really, a torpedo to blow up a tree? I mean, we have these things called axes. And they it takes a little bit of work, but, you know, they can mess up a tree pretty bad.
Right, right. Well, they basically, Lore is beamed out of the off the Enterprise and basically just floats out into space
for 2 years,
which is actually pretty short if you think about how long you could be floating out in space.
Space is a big place.
Yeah, that actually somebody found him is actually amazing.
Packlets found him.
Yeah,
we would like to go.
Yeah, those guys are.
Please make us go.
Those guys, go to the bathroom.
Go. Whichever way to go.
The toilet's in the other room if you gotta go.
Oh, but that will not take us home?
Well, if you follow it, you turd. Anyways, yeah, those are pretty annoying rays. But so Lore disappears for a while. Then we're going to jump into the next episode where this is a non-Lore episode, but they run into... this is the Schizoid Man.
Schizoid Man. Yeah. Season 2 of The Next Generation.
This is a little bit better than the first season, but it still has its silliness, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like Next Generation and Deep Space Nine both hit their stride in Season 3 going forward.
Yeah.
First two seasons of both are kind of rough around the edges.
So, Schizoid Man, they're looking. They get a distress call for Dr. Ira Graves, who's a prominent specialist in cybernetics. He's basically dying. They get to the planet and they find he's there. He's kind of a grumpy old man who's on his last couple days on the planet before his health fails him. And we also meet his assistant. It was her name's Karine.
Yeah, Karine. And most importantly, we meet Dr. Salar.
Dave's future Vulcan wife.
Well, no, I mean, like, I really don't like Dr. Pulaski. We didn't get into this in our like debating the series thing, but I just don't like Dr. Pulaski.
I have no problem with Dr. Pulaski, but
she's so, well, okay.
She is the McCoy in female form.
Yeah, but I don't like her. We had McCoy, he's a human doctor. We had Beverly Crusher, a human doctor. We had Dr. Pulaski, a human doctor. We had the doctor from Voyager, who was a hologram of a human doctor, who replaced another human doctor that died in episode 1 of Voyager. Mm-hmm. And then we have Dr. Bashir, who's also a human doctor. Do you notice a trend?
Well, wait
the
a
only
second.
Time we don't have a human doctor is Dr. Phlox on Enterprise.
I was going to say, Dr. Phlox is...
That's the only non-human doctor we have.
Well,
if they're replacing Beverly, they should have replaced her with Salar. That would have been awesome.
Well, she was only lieutenant.
Doesn't matter. Promote her. Make her a doctor. Make her a real doctor. I mean, at least it'd be something different. Even if they brought Beverly back in Season 3, at least we could have had a season of a non-human doctor.
I guess.
I would have liked that.
I guess.
I just didn't like Pulaski, mostly because she was so mean to Data. I don't think... I think Data and Salar would have gotten along quite nicely. And they wouldn't have made a bet to, you know, make the computer outsmart Data in the holodeck and... I know we weren't supposed to go into holodeck stuff, but I just had to rant about how I don't like Pulaski. She caused this whole mess with the holodeck.
All right. Well, anyways, so Dr. Pulaski, the Enterprise has to leave. They can't stick around. The USS Constantinople is in trouble. They have a hull breach. They have like 2,000 colonists aboard. and they need to save them. So while they're down on the planet, they meet with Dr. Ira Graves, and he basically informs Data that he taught Dr. Noonien Soon a lot of information about how to construct.
Yet he never built an android himself. I'm going to call BS on that one.
And he has Data call him Grandpa the whole time.
Grandpa? What is this, Grandpa? What is death?
That's your penis.
No. What is that tune you whistle? I don't know how to whistle. It sounds like someone blowing through a plastic bottle.
So what happens is Dr. Ira Graves is about to die, and he implants all his memories into Data while they're alone in a room. So violates Data.
Because he's like, don't tell me where your off switch is.
Don't tell me.
I'll figure it out. You know, this is probably going to be an off-color joke.
It's your butthole, isn't it?
It's his butt. It's like, every time they switch him off, it's like they grab his butt. So he's guessing where Dr. Soon put it. Dr. Soon is presumably single.
So I'm guessing so, Dr. Soon has such a twisted.
Maybe he was batting for the, you know, the other team, which is why he put the off switch
in his butt.
And if Data was so, like, you know, vulnerable. If he's so vulnerable with his switch in his butt, I mean, he told Dr. Crusher about it earlier, and like, why? He's a robot. You could probably just have that removed, like a mole.
Yeah, he probably could have.
Why would he keep his off switch?
I think they actually changed it later on, so I'm assuming they changed it later on. But yeah, Dr. Ira Graves violates Data and puts his
in more ways than one.
Puts his intelligence into Data. And
maybe that's why Data doesn't remember the other time he got it on. Because he doesn't remember anything during this time where he's taken
it. No, he doesn't want to remember. It's all suppressed memories because of the abuse.
To love him was to know him was to love him.
Yeah. After Dr. Ira Graves, they're going to beam him out into space as a funeral. Data gives a...
Why didn't they shoot him out in the torpedo? That's typical Starfleet burial fashion. Oh, maybe he wasn't a member of Starfleet. Maybe yeah, he wanted to spare the ammunition.
And maybe it's actually, you know, cheaper on the sets than to construct a whole, you know, a new set for a torpedo room.
Steal the one from Star Trek 2. It's probably destroyed, but whatever.
So basically, Dr. Graves takes over Data's mind. And he's doing this basically not just to extend his life, but he's in love with Karina's assistant before he felt it was improper to love a young girl. But it's all right to molest his grandson.
His quote-unquote grandson. I still don't really believe that this guy gave Noonien Soon the android formula since he didn't build his own android.
Right, so...
Or spin one up on a platter.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So he basically freaks out Kareen with good measure. He butts head with Picard multiple times.
He's like, Picard wants her. I'm like, does Data have a sixth sense of who wants who?
No, but like, it's the jealousy of Dr. Graves that's coming through.
But I mean, like, he's just throwing her around the ship. Like, how does that immediately indicate to like sexual attraction? That doesn't necessarily follow.
I think it makes sense. I think because
she's a cute young girl.
He sees somebody who could be potentially that she could find attractive because of his status and power. You know, so I think it's a viable jump. Logic.
But he says you will never have her because she doesn't like older men and stuff. So then if she doesn't like older men and doesn't like people who aren't as smart, you know, aren't as smart as regular scientists like Picard would be, so why was he worrying?
I don't know.
Was he thinking
maybe he was worried that maybe Picard like older men and he wasted all that time on the planet alone with her.
So was he worried that Picard was going to like try to force his way on her?
I don't know.
It was just a really weird interaction.
And it was like, a brilliant cyberneticist. Why couldn't he construct a cybernetic penis? I mean, come on. If he had problems getting it up.
I'm sure they've got Viagra. Man, with it. No, I think he thought it was inappropriate with age, but I guess, I don't know. I mean,
people
marry older people all the time.
All the time.
Usually for money, but, you know, there's no money in the 24th century, so why the hell not?
And you're alone on a planet. I mean, a whole planet, just two humans. That something's going to happen if it's going to happen. So, the data that's being controlled by Dr. Ira Graves is basically...
insubordinate.
Not just insubordinate. He starts basically beating people up and...
Slapping people.
Actually knocks out Captain Picard as well.
Oh, he just slapped him across the face.
He bitch slapped Picard, and Picard fell like a wet blanket on the ground.
Okay, let's be realistic, people. If Data hit somebody like Picard like that, they would not have a head on their shoulders anymore.
Well, I don't think he hit him that hard. He kind of just like gave him a slap.
Yes, but Data is also many, many times stronger than regular people. And the whole point of the slap thing was he didn't realize how strong the body was.
Right, right. Well, yeah, after there's like six guys in engineering.
Just a pile of guys.
Just a pile of guys around him. He just kept on slapping. And he realizes that he can't stay in the body. And he goes back to Data's quarters, transfers his intelligence to the Enterprise computer, but all personality consciousness is lost.
It wasn't a very good personality. So no, I think the world is in a better
the universe is a better place without Dr. Ira Graves. And then we'll come back at now to Lore again, where Lore's not in the next one, the episode Brothers. He's not a prominent person in this, but he does show up in the episode where Dr. Noonien Soon basically calls Data away, and Data basically steals the Enterprise, locking the whole crew out.
Turns off the life support in the bridge. Data, what is wrong? Twitches his head. Data, what's wrong? And he just doesn't answer. They don't think to lock out the codes. They just let him do what he's doing. They don't grab his butt and turn him off. They just let him do what he's going to do.
That's right. So, again, we show that if Data is given the opportunity to run wild, he will not just take over everybody. He will dominate everybody. I mean, the whole Enterprise crew is at Data's mercy.
And he can do perfect Picard impressions to lock out even the captain from Vile Systems on the ship.
Right.
Exactly. 7-2-8-6-7-8-2-6-4 18-19-20.
Yeah, exactly. So he gives an outrageous code, locks out everybody from the ship. They can't do anything. It's actually a really cool bit of writing there.
It's a great sequence. I really like it a lot.
And then they actually they get to this planet where he beams down, and he is brought back to his normal Data self by Dr. Noonien Soon, and he meets his father for the first time. And his father basically lets him know that he's dying, and he's wanted to, impart some information to Data. It's actually, this is probably... one of the best episodes I think I really enjoyed with Data. I kind of completely forgot about this episode, to tell you the truth. It's been a while since I've seen it.
It's a good episode, but it is kind of a sleeper episode because it's kind of... It's not really action-y.
Well, the whole beginning is great.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, it just... I don't know. It's just kind of like... it's a great episode, but it just... Somehow it's easily forgettable, I guess.
I think compared to, like, all the different... Like, when they're fighting Klingons, Romulans, and whatever else is out there. It's not one that...
It just gets swallowed up in the season that's around. It's a great episode.
But it's so well written. And the one thing I was talking to you about before is when Lore is summoned by the same force that brings Data to
him. That's actually when we find out that he's dying. Because Lore's like, you're just going to have a reunion without me. I'll go leave. He's like, wait, I'm dying.
And Lore has an actual, like a real reaction to it. It's like, you can't die.
You look fine. You're only 168 years old.
And it's like a sincere reaction. I actually, you got to give props to Brett Spiner who did all that, because he played all three parts, and I thought he did really well, doing each of them.
Yeah, that was their low-budget episode to fill in for something. I'm sure they had bigger special effects on something, because you had Brett Spiner doing, like, running the episode by himself, which I'm sure gave him, like, legs to do it. They were originally thinking about doing, like, a female, like, android as a counterpart instead of a male one, so they could have, like, you know, Data experience some kind of romance or something, but then they decided, oh, let's do Evil Twin instead.
Evil Twin's more fun. But
not for Data.
Or anybody else, for that matter. But so Dr. Soon is going to give him the emotion chip that we'll see again and again pop up, especially through the movies.
Well, in the show, the emotion chip is a nice paper-thin disc with a V cut out of it. Right. And in the movie, it's a giant, like,
I know, I like how it keeps cube. Changing it. And they keep changing it. Maybe they're, you know, like, they're working on it or something. So, basically what happens is, actually by the end of the episode, not only does Dr. Soon die, not totally from Lore, but Lore has an outburst, and, you know,
because Lore stole the...
He steals the emotion chip.
He steals Data's clothes. Apparently he likes changing clothes a lot. Yeah. He didn't leave Data naked. He put his clothes on Data... Put Data's clothes on him.
It'd be great if Data walked out completely buck naked. He's like, what's going on?
I guess he didn't want to get painted all the way down. But he makes up some kind of rhyme about how he can't tell his sons apart and then slaps him across the room.
Yeah, and essentially, he's still alive, but this is the last probably 15 minutes of his life. So Data gets to be alone with his father just before his father passes away. And it was very interesting. I thought the whole thing had a nice touch to it of, being reacquainted with his father. Even the evil brother Lore has some kind of emotional response to his father dying. And I think it just had a nice feel to it, watching it again. Now I'm an adult. And I'm not seeing it as like a 20-year-old, 18-year-old young person. So you have a different appreciation for it.
Yeah, the whole family aspect, yeah. And then the B story where the brothers are played pranks on each other, and one of them super ill.
Right. Well, yeah, we didn't really touch on that, but in the last
they
the last
of parallel the, each other. A little
yeah,
bit.
They do. In the last. Last line is Beverly talks about, because of the young brothers who played a prank on each other, and it's like they seem like they've gotten over the differences, Data says, and Beverly says, yeah, that's because brothers forgive each other. And it kind of leaves Data thinking at the end.
That almost kind of made me tear up a little bit. Like, yeah, it just kind of hits you at the spot.
It's a sweet, it's a sweet sentiment, in that, especially after seeing that. So it was a very well done episode. It is a sleeper episode. It's not like something to be like, that's my best episode ever, but it's really well written.
That's definitely an interesting point about, you know, how watching Star Trek as an adult is completely different than watching it as a child. Like, I wouldn't have gotten upset. I wouldn't have gotten upset about that at all as a child.
Right, you know, it's like, I hate my brother.
Yeah, but now it's like I don't see my family all that much anymore, and you know.
Yeah, you think about like the what you have there is different now. The last we have Descent 1 and 2. Where Lore, this is a very long, convoluted story, but let's just boil it down into Lore.
Hooks up with Hugh.
Pew. His retarded brother.
He hooks up with Hugh, the Borg they found, and gave a personality and a name and set free. And this personality infected the Borg. The Borg couldn't function, and
the Borg had to go through some restructuring. Let's just put it that way. And a couple of them got sledged off and ran away, and they didn't know what to do with themselves. And they found Lore, who was more than happy to tell them what to do with themselves.
Supreme Leader, Hail Lore!
Right, and then we have again Data and Lore.
Lore has a way of, since he stole the emotion chip, he's got a way of transmitting emotions to Data. And only negative ones, like hate, anger, and pleasure from doing bad things.
Right. And basically, so Data is now another robot behaving badly. And once again, he is causing havoc. And now joined up with the Borg. This actually, Descent 1 and 2.
Dysfunctional Borg.
Yeah, the Descent 1 and 2 is actually a really well done, you know, two episode. There's a lot of fun. It's a lot of action.
Where Beverly gets to run the Enterprise. When a doctor takes over the Enterprise.
She flies it into the sun.
Yes, with metaphysics shielding. Yes. And then it's really funny because I watched an episode of Deep Space Nine recently. It's the one after Jadzia dies. Spoilers! Where the Klingons are trying to avenge her death with a great battle, and they get them in the Stovacor, and they basically fly into the sun, and they use some kind of particle thing to shoot the Corona and make it destroy the Jem'Hadar ships. And they took that exactly from this episode.
Yeah, yeah. I just think it was conveniently, it's like, you know, what about those... you know, studies about, you know, the whatever it was, shielding that they used.
Metaphasic shielding.
It's just like, it just happened to have it. And
they had an episode previously in the season where the Ferengi who had developed it, and there was like a murder mystery around like these scientists who were talking about it. So they kept the documents that were, you know, left over from that episode.
Well, and then, what's her name? Ensign Tate? Who's the Beverly's Worf?
Complete with a sassy attitude.
she basically she will actually.
I didn't know I'd be tactical of officer after only 8 weeks.
I know, she's even wearing the blue uniform. She's wearing the blue uniform. She doesn't even know where the torpedo buttons are. And
I cut people open for a living. I don't know what a torpedo is.
I don't know.
Torpedo does the job too fast.
Well, not just that, but she just happened to do her senior thesis in like solar flares or something of that nature.
On shooting things into the sun and making them explode.
I just think it's like all worked out real well for Beverly in that one. So
Beverly somehow got super lucky. Like, maybe she's part traveler and just likes to sought out the right people.
Well, you know. Her counter at PowerPoint.
episode one reference.
It's episode one.
Episode one reference.
So, that being said, Lore and Data are basically, Data is turned evil from Lore from having all these negative emotions. They capture Picard, Geordi, and Troy, and he basically tortures his friend Geordi by not just only taking his visor, but putting tubes into his head and trying to irradiate his brain.
They're besties.
Oh, yeah.
This is how besties, you know, experiment on each other.
Remember when you moved my off switch from my butt? Well, now I'm going to put tubes in your head. So...
But he never did, so Data was kind of angry about that.
Yeah, so this is the androids are running amok, and the Enterprise is on the run by the Borg ship, and they have to find a way to escape. Fortunately for Picard, we have Commander Riker and Worf discover some other Borgs that have actually broken away from Lore's... command. It doesn't really agree with what Lore's doing.
Hugh
shows up again. Hugh's not too happy to see them again, actually.
You brought disorder to order.
I was doing fine before I met you guys. You were dying. So, not only do they not want to be part of the Borg, they don't want to be part of Lore's thing.
We built you a DC outlet, dude.
So he basically now he shows them there's a underground tunnel that runs under their base and that they can try to sneak into,
which from the Underground Railroad during the Civil War. Oh wait.
Yeah, this is a different planet. So
it was Burbank.
Again, nothing to do with the Civil War.
That's what they want you to. We're all about conspiracy theories today, guys.
NASA's hiding it from us.
They're hiding that Underground Railroad.
Went to Burbank. Those slaves all could have been free. Those goddamn NASA scientists.
They went back in time. It's ancient aliens,
bunch
guys.
Bunch of racist because slave owners.
On one of the recent ancient aliens, they are also talking about how the aliens were in the Civil War influencing it. It was awesome.
You gotta be kidding me.
It's It's so funny.
So glad I missed that.
I love that show because it's so dumb.
Oh, jeez. There is a kind of a final combat where the Lore's faction of Borgs and the Borgs that are non-Lore all start fighting. And
a showdown at the OK Corral.
Right. Borg. And Data decides that he doesn't want to be part of Lore's party anymore.
Bad emotions are bad.
These emotions make me feel bad.
They make me feel unhappy. And I'm hurting Geordi. Geordi may not live. And if he doesn't live, I can't hurt him more.
There's actually it's a great episode. It's a lot of fun. It's a big adventure episode. I really enjoyed this episode as well. It's what's this? Is this sixth season or is this?
This is season six.
Yeah, this is.
It is the season six to season seven crossover cliffhanger episode.
This is almost the height of their power of Next Generation, where just everything is.
They're out of their mind on power.
Yeah, they're just firing full thrusters.
Great writing, great acting. Troy in an actual Starfleet uniform.
They actually put her in a blue cat uniform, and she's not showing her.
You're a science officer? I thought you were a purple shirt. Denim purple.
Yeah. Well, so
she's her own kind of science.
She is. We have robots gone wild, robots all losing their mind and trying to kill and destroy everything in humanity.
Pretty sure Lore wasn't out of his mind. He knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah, but he was, I don't think even Dr. Soon wanted him to be that evil. I think he wanted him to be maybe a reflection of himself, but it was too much.
But remember, Dr. Soong, his grandfather, originally worked on the robots, and he was evil because he was messing with the augments, who are the people like Khan,
right,
Noonien Singh.
Right, yeah.
It sounds like they're related.
Yeah, no, they were definitely related, and I think... So
maybe the original programming he was writing down in his jail cell got put into Lore, and that made him...
Well, wasn't that at the end of the Enterprise...
The Enterprise arc, yeah. He was like, since I can't do... human genetic, maybe I should go into androids. And maybe some of this old code that he wrote down was like evil code because he wanted them to be like the augments and be evil.
Right, right. But then, you know, you got a Data too.
Yeah, they're almost identical.
Just like before.
Before. You know, what I think happened, I don't think there was a before. It just seemed like some BS they made up for Nemesis. Data shot Lore at the end of this two-parter. And we never hear from Lore again. So maybe Shinzon in his bald glory found Lore, because Lore was built first.
Right.
And wiped his memory and decided to name him Before, and they scattered his body around a planet with a really bad...
That's a good theory. That's a good theory.
With a really bad spot filter on it.
I just think... I don't mind the idea of a Before being out there. I just thought that was just poorly... just, like, thrown in there.
Like, oh, let's give... You know, it's they had to resurrect Data. They killed him, but they couldn't, like, really, really kill him.
So but they did they because to. He's basically the stupid version of his brother.
Well, no, he gets downloaded. He starts whistling really badly at the. Actually, he probably whistles perfectly because they probably forgot that he whistled badly before, because the movies are kind of inconsistent with the rest of the series. But in the Star Trek Countdown comics, which is canon to the new JJ universe, Before isn't anymore, and Data is Captain of the Enterprise because all the Data programming took over.
Oh, interesting.
And this is canon. It's really good. The tie into the original 2009 movie is really good. It's a lot of story. It really fleshes out the character of Nero, which the movie, you know, gave you the Cliff Notes version, and this comic is really good. It's Countdown, Star Trek Countdown is the name of the comic. It's a four-part series. You can probably find it as an anthology all in one book somewhere.
Cool. Very cool.
And through the App Store if you've got, you know, iBooks or whatever. You can find it there. It's really good. If you like Star Trek 2009, I highly recommend reading Countdown.
Brandy. Less talk, more Synthahol.
All right, Worf.
Oh, come on, Worf. Can't we talk some more? But since we're at the end of the main Robots Gone Wild event, we're going to our segment, Riker Scores. And unfortunately, this isn't about Riker. We are still going with the robot theme. And unfortunately, we run out of Data really quick. We're less than 10 episodes in, and we can't talk about Data scoring anymore.
But it seems appropriate.
Given the name of this episode and the contents therein.
You are the most beautiful woman in the galaxy. You don't know how long I've wanted to tell you that.
But you're afraid.
Yes.
Of me?
Of us, of what we might become. Then you're inviting me in.
I'm not sending you away.
That's more than I expected.
Is it as much as you hoped?
To hope is to recognize the possibility. I had only dreams.
Dreams can be dangerous.
Not these dreams. I dream of a galaxy where your eyes are the stars and the universe worships the night.
Putting me on a pedestal so high you may not be able to reach me.
Then I'll learn how to fly. You are the heart in my day and the soul in my night.
We lost two more relays. I can't.
Shut up, kid.
Right. So for this Riker Scores, we are going to talk about Data and his first score, where Data gets his cherry popped.
The Naked Time?
Naked Time, him and Tasha Yar. Is there anything probably more popular in all Star Trek sexual history than Data and Tasha Yar?
It comes up a lot. It's I don't know if you've seen the episode of Trekkies. I mean, just the documentary Trekkies. Denise Crosby is, of course, the host of this, and she comes across some fan erotic art of their encounter.
I forgot about that, actually. It's been a while since I've seen that. But
Trekkie's definitely worth the watch. You can see some interesting stuff on there, including a woman obsessed with Brent Spiner. She takes pictures of him at conventions, a million pictures of him just holding a microphone.
Right.
Imagining it's something else, probably.
I hope she doesn't listen to this episode. it gave her more fuel to her fire. So we have...
She had albums and albums and albums of this stuff. Check out Trekkies and Trekkies 2.
So that being said, Naked Time was a throwback of the original series of Naked Now. Is that what it was?
Yeah, and it's the second episode of Next Generation. They go and they copy an episode from the original series on their second episode. I wouldn't have minded it so much if it was maybe later in the series, but whatever. It's the little disease that makes a little noise.
And they get this kind of drunken feeling where they
get sweaty.
They get sweaty and they lose their inhibitions and they become certain...
Who they really want to be, probably.
Right, if they didn't have anything to holding them back. You know, in the original series... Sulu became a swashbuckler. Christine became kind of just enamored with herself, and Kirk wished that he could find love, but decided he loves the ship more. And Spock just became a blubbering idiot inside the conference room. So when we fast forward into Next Generation, we have the same thing going on. Tasha Yar's security officer, who is a very guarded lady, all of a sudden becomes a very highly sexualized person.
She breaks into Deanna Troi's quarters and starts trying on all her clothes, mm-hmm. because Tasha doesn't own one nice piece of clothing. No. her closet only has uniforms in it.
Uniforms and overalls.
And onesies. Yeah,
she is not the type of girl that wears goes to the Victoria's Secrets or Fredericks or Hollywood's and picks out sexy lingerie.
But we all know there's Beta Z Secrets, and she knows this, so she goes to the Beta Z quarters.
And she picks out the sexiest outfit, smooses back her hair, and...
Because she barely has the need to hold down.
Yes, that's right. And she basically... confronts Data that she wants to jump his bones.
Well, she invites him in, and she's like, "Can you do it?" and he's like, "Yes, I'm fully functional." And like, Data seemed to be drunk, but maybe he's just like, "Let's see what happens.
Let's go with this. Let's see where this goes." Data's always trying to explore humanity, so maybe just, like, you know, while in Rome, do as the Romans do. So I wonder about that too. This is another.
How was Data really affected by this?
This is like the Vulcan mind meld with Nomad.
But actually, we forgot to mention this in the episodes. In two of the episodes, Troy can sense Data's feelings, so that also doesn't make very much sense. How does she sense what a robot thinks when she can't sense what a Ferengi thinks?
I don't know.
Ferengis are Ferengis robots?
No.
Another NASA cover up.
Those racist scientist bastards. So Data and Tashiar, obviously the scene is really quick. I mean, it's only...
He goes in, the door shuts.
It's got to be like less than a minute, the whole scene where he walks in on her and they have that brief conversation and the door shuts and that's all you know. It is literally this little segment, this 1 minute, has been the probably most sexual, explosive thing that happened besides maybe Kirk kissing Uhura back in the 1960s. So, I mean, out of all the episodes, of all the, you know, sexual things that would happen in all the different Star Treks out there, this is up there. This is probably maybe, if not number two, number one.
Yeah. So Data, he chronologizes this because he references it, like we talked about, in the first contact where Data scores. And it's really funny, we talk about Riker scores, and so far Data's equaling Riker, but unfortunately...
This is where Data stops.
This is where Data stops, so
we're
new,
sorry, Mr.
New and greater things.
Although, unless we're going to count Dr. Ira Graves as sexual abuse.
We're not... that was just briefly mentioned earlier in this episode, so we're that's not going to come up again as a scores
no,
segment.
No, that's us just joking around, and there's nothing funny about sexual abuse either. We're just being goofy.
PSA, we also do not condone sexual abuse.
Suicide, sexual abuse is out.
No. So this podcast is not brought to you by those things.
No. But that being said, Data...
And both start with the letter S, so...
This is unusable.
Do we have a number to go with our letter today?
No. B4.
Oh, well, I guess so.
So there we have it. Androids, robots. We should all be leery of that when that does come around. We see that on the horizon coming very soon, even in our own world, that they're robots... might be a bigger part of our lives. And just remember that sooner or later, they're all going to try to kill us.
That is, unless we become the Borg and integrate the robot stuff into us so we can keep up with them. Because the technological singularity is coming. Tinfoil hats, everybody.
That might happen, too. But we'll see where that all goes. And if it does happen, we'll make sure that we will be assimilated.
Yes, assimilate ourselves first. That way the robots can't kill us. We could outsmart and outthink them with our robot parts built in.
And I myself would like to say beforehand, I'd like to welcome our mechanical overlords. And let you know that I might be good for rounding up maybe other nice biological units for assimilation.
We are biological units. We do not want to be hurt.
No.
We will suck up to you to prevent us from dying.
Please do not anally probe me.
Wait, no, this is aliens we're talking. No, I don't think the robots do that to each other.
No.
The robots are civilized creatures.
They don't anally probe.
They just kill you.
Okay. They just
they murder you, but they're not gonna do anything, you know,
gotcha,
bad.
Gotcha.
Unless you know their program.
right. So.
Alright, guys. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed our manacle rants about robots.
Thank you for listening. All our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or follow them on Twitter at warp11. You can find us online at synthaholics.com. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. Our Twitter is at synthaholicduo. If you want to follow us individually, you can follow me at David_J_Duncan. And Aaron at Blackbird2004. If you liked our podcast, please subscribe to us on iTunes. We can also be found on Stitcher. Please tell your friends about the show. Also, if you could leave us a review and a rating, that would help us out so much. It'll help us learn how to improve so we can reach more of our fellow Trek fans. We'd love to hear your feedback. Live long and prosper.
Simon came in. Country boys born and raised at the stars we did gaze. The next morning he left stinking of gin. Well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink. And we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Oh, Jesus. All right, so we can do the testing.
The androids are here. Do not worry. They are here to rule you. They are better than you, you carbon-based life form.
Better than everything.
They're logical. They're smarter, sexier. And they can go all night long.
Is Brent Spiner actually sexy?
No, not really. But Andrea is.
Yes, and Sevar. Selar, actually Selar.
Yeah, but she's not an android. She's a Vulcan.
She's the biological equivalent to an android.
Yeah. But the androids will shoot her out the airlock.
I bet she could fool them into making them think that she is one of them.
Maybe for a while, yeah. Until she had a poop.